and welcome to Future Library. We've got another episode here for you. I've got a guest, and I'm about to cough, which isn't very professional, but needs must. These things happen. My guest today has had, well, it's quite a broad portfolio of things she does. But rather than try and kind of explain it all myself, I'll introduce you to Alice Spagnola. How are you doing, Ali?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Now, I know a little bit about you. The listeners may know some may not. So tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm a musician and an artist. You want like the full background on the music stuff or what do you
whatever
think?
You want to tell us, whatever you think is the appropriate information that people need to have.
All right. Well, I am well known online for my drinking game. My album is called A Power Hour, and it is 60 songs that are all 1 minute long, and every time I change the music, the audience will drink along with me, so my live show is actually an interactive drinking game. And that's probably what I'm most known for. I also create free paintings. It's a project I've been doing for 6 years now, where I will take requests online for what to paint, and I paint one thing a day and mail it to whomever asked for it for free. Hence, it's called Free Paintings.
Yes. And I've actually been looking through your website and your blog today. And I really like your paintings. I like the way that they're kind of nicely kind of bold and colourful and nice kind of heavy lines. I like them a lot.
So, well, thank you.
Obviously, all the things we're talking about, listeners, will be linked in the little kind of commenty thing. When you download the podcast, there'll be some information and it'll tell you about it. Unless you download it from iTunes, because I don't know if it's got the information on iTunes. And if it hasn't got the information on iTunes, then go to petpiranha.com, where the information will be. Or there'll also be a website we'll talk about at the end of the show. So it'll be all, there'll be stuff, you'll be able to find it, is the short version of what I'm trying to say here, as I kind of fumble my way through it. But yes, the Power Hour stuff. I noticed when I was looking through the information earlier, you did a Kickstarter for it, for a tour.
Yeah, crowdfunding.
Yeah, and you did the tour because you'd had the Freedom Victory campaign, and I believe it was somebody tried to copyright the idea of Power Hours, is that right?
Yeah, a guy got a trademark on the term Power Hour, and so he was trying to stop everyone from playing the game.
So just anybody in general across the world? Or
yep.
So anybody you wanted
to say that the whole game belonged to him.
So the idea of anything that happened for an hour that involved doing something involving power and use the title Power Hour, he was trying to stop.
Well, I think there were like Power Hour sales at Kohl's that people have pointed out, and like Power Hour radio shows.
Yeah.
But that wasn't under his jurisdiction. His was just about the actual drinking game, which is what I was playing. So, I mean, it's not as broad as it seems, but it was still global that he was trying to get people to stop playing.
And how did this resolve itself? What happened to stop that?
I fought him in court for 3 years and ended up winning. So now Power Hour is free for everyone to play.
Fantastic. And you then, was it after that you then did the crowdfunder to play the tour to go with it?
Correct, yes. Then I put together the crowdfunding and wanted to celebrate across the U.S. the positive announcement for the legal victory. And so my fans all banded together to come bring me to them, and I've crossed the US playing Power Hours.
That's great. And you made quite a lot of money from the crowdfunder.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I was so shocked and honored that people would want to give $40,000 to make this happen, but they did, and it was great. The tour was absolutely unbelievable.
And what was your target? Was your target around $40,000, or was it, as is often the case with these things, lower?
It was actually right at 40,000, and it came down for the last 15 minutes. So,
you just got it just under the wire. Because yeah. I think that's the thing with these crowdfunder things, isn't it? If you don't get it, you don't get anything.
And if it's right. Well, mine was a little different because it was actually on Indiegogo, so I still could have taken a sort of lower amount. But it's much, much more wonderful to get fully funded and be able to say that, you know, we had done it.
Fantastic. So I'm very aware that I'm saying the word fantastic a lot again. I did this on a podcast again recently, which may in the way the podcast goes, that episode might come out after this one. So it's going to be a bit strange for the listeners, me complaining about saying the word fantastic over and over again. So it all gets very confusing when there's lots and lots of things going on at once. So you started doing, you've done the tour, and you've got the shot glass as well.
Yes.
Tell us about the album, shot glass USB.
My album comes in unconventional packaging. I invented a shot glass USB. So it's got a USB in the bottom, and you can basically drink out of my album.
I see. And do you encourage that listeners remove the USB before they start drinking?
Or you
You do recommend it?
Actually, I encourage my users to leave it in and dunk it in beer so they have to buy another one.
I see. So there's a kind of an ulterior motive to making the USB part of something that could damage the USB.
No, not really. And actually, if it gets wet, this is true for any USBs, if they get wet, you just let them dry out and they'll keep working as long as you don't plug them in while they're wet.
Yes. I think if it's got something with sugars in it, though, I think that can kind of mess it up. I think if it's spirits, you're okay. But if there's sugars, I think they kind of corrode the chips and stuff. But yeah, I mean, technically, you're absolutely right. I mean, you could get your laptop as long as it was switched off and completely powered down. I'm not sure how well it would deal with the screen, but maybe take the screen off. But you could theoretically put it in water and take it out, take it apart and completely dry it and put it back together. And it would theoretically work again. I'm not recommending that, listeners. I'm not saying you should do that, but you can do that. Now, going back to the paintings, I was reading the website about this, and so you're doing them on a kind of daily basis. You've been doing them for several years, you say, and I believe that you're now got quite a long waiting list.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, people are really into free things, and so I have a couple thousand people waiting in line for paintings that will be waiting a couple thousand days.
So that's going to be at least 3 or 4 years for some people, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Or maybe more. It's a long list.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how long is it now? Is it up to more?
Well, yeah, it's around a couple thousand. So it's not too crazy considering how many people are out there on the internet and how not charging I am with this project. But it still is a lot when you think about the fact that I only do one a day.
Do you ever find yourself sitting there doing them and just thinking, why did I decide to do this?
Yeah, I mean, it happens occasionally where I'm like exhausted with it or whatever. But honestly, I like having it, and the satisfaction I get from not stopping this project for 6 years is much better than anything where I'd feel crappy about doing it.
Yeah. And how big are they?
12 by 12. So
they're quite large.
1 square foot.
Yeah. So they're kind of LP cover size, aren't they?
Yes, exactly.
And I'm looking at some of the pictures now, and I can see that you've got some shown in a gallery, which is kind of a nice thing to see. It must be quite satisfying seeing them all kind of in one place when you're able to do that, or seeing as many of them as possible in one place.
Yeah, they're cool, especially because of the square format. They like panel the wall. It looks really nice.
Mm-hmm. No, I really like that. So that's well worth people checking out. I mean, again, that's something that there'll be links to and everything like that. So, I mean, how did you get into, what are your kind of origins of this? How did you end up where you are?
Well, I was into music and art all throughout high school and my childhood. I went to art school, actually. I have a degree from Carnegie Mellon in sculpture, which is interesting. I ended up doing some graphic design kind of work at a video game company right out of college, and was still pursuing music. And I wrote all our video game music too, so that was a lot of a similar kind of challenge to writing a Power Hour, because it would be short form type of songs in different genres and based on a style that I had to emulate. So that's trained me well for what I eventually ended up doing with my Power Hour, which was writing 61-minute songs that are all really different in terms of genre and style. And, so from there, I I actually, oh, it was in college that I had started my free paintings project. It was actually my senior year thesis, we'll say, and I haven't stopped it since.
So did you go through the kind of, it's a question I often ask people in the show, is that, you know, often people who are kind of, who have become kind of solo artists effectively, did you do the whole being in bands thing?
Yeah, I was in a band once, and we were a folk band. It was funny, we were called Four Ugly Dudes, and it was four guys and me on drums, which is funny, but otherwise, yeah, I've mostly just been a solo act since I was writing albums in college till now.
That's quite interesting, because a lot of people I speak to kind of end up being solo because they get tired of being in bands, but it sounds to me that you kind of just hopped straight to being solo. Was there something that appealed to you about working alone, or was it kind of a, well, was it necessity? Was it something you found is easier to do?
Yeah, I definitely found that things get done faster and better when I just take them on myself. And of course, there's something to be said about building a team, and that's definitely what I try to work towards now. But it's really much easier to rely on yourself in terms of, you know, timing and thoroughness, I've found.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through the whole thing myself of being in bands for years and then slowly moving away from it and then making music on my own, because it does get to the point where it gets so boring having another argument with another member of a band about some piece of music that you kind of don't really like or something. And I absolutely agree. It is so much easier just do it on your own, because then if you decide something's shit when you're working on it, you can just go, oh yeah, I'll just put it to one side and I'll start something else, instead of having to explain to the rest of the band who maybe have invested hours and hours in something that you've decided you don't like it. So yeah, I can encourage staying solo, to be honest. It's far easier. But I'm still kind of quite intrigued by the free paintings things, because it's something that's been discussed on the podcast several times. It's been the idea of whether music itself should be given away free, or whether people should use things like Bandcamp. And it's quite interesting that you've managed to make the music kind of tangible by putting it in the USB stick in the shot glass, and then you're giving away something tangible as well. So yeah. Where do you sit on the free, well, I mean, obviously on the free art side of things, you're obviously pro that. So it's a bit of a redundant question, really, isn't it? But where do you sit?
No, I mean, not really. It's probably different than you would expect. So I created the shot glass USB actually as a way to counter that whole free culture, because of course you have to give your art and or your music specifically away in today's world. People it's not coming off as of course, but to me it seems that there's no other option other than to have it out there and really accessible. You know, all my music is on YouTube. You can play my Power Hour online without paying a cent. And that my way to sort of fight that was that I created a physical thing that was much better of an experience than just music downloads. And that also goes back to the fact that I was a sculpture major, and I always have this desire to make something physical that people could desire. And so that's how that came into play. And along the lines of the painting thing, I was actually doing this free painting stuff before Radiohead ever did their, you know, pay what you want model, right? And before, well, I guess it was Shareware was still doing the kind of thing where it's like, if you like it, please donate. But it didn't really come into vogue until later, after I'd been doing the project for a while. But what works for that or online downloads is not what works for what I'm doing with a painting, because my work is physical and I have to actually make each one of them. So there's no way to actually, even if I did the pay what you want model, it's a horrible business model, because you can't duplicate my work, you know, infinitely and in the way that you can with a download. If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think this is the thing. It's you know, it's been the discussion that I've had a lot, is with the way the internet has made I'm trying to think how to word it, with the way the internet has made it almost inevitable that people are going to take things for nothing, and the fact that they now expect to get things for nothing, there has to be a way of trying to work out how to either monetize what you do in such a way that it makes sense, or make things that just can't be downloaded. And it seems to me the, you know, doing something unusual with the packaging or doing the paintings. It seems that there's still the kind of the weird kind of back to frontness of that you're actually giving away the tangible thing. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
making people pay for the intangible thing.
It's true. I do. I mean, I accept donations for the painting, mm-hmm. so it is really technically the pay what you want model. But just because I have to have my hand on each thing as opposed to making it once like a song and then just downloads being duplicated over and over again, it's a little different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing you found from doing all the painting is that it keeps your practice going, doesn't it?
I've been painting every day for 6 years, so at least I don't suck at it yet.
And there's nothing bad about it. I mean, I did a project a couple of years ago called A Thing a Day for all of 2012. And during that year, I either did a drawing, a photograph, or a piece of music every day. And I actually found that doing the music was the easiest thing to do. Actually, no, I tell a lie, doing the photographs was the easiest thing to do. That was my lazy day ones, was I'd just take a photograph of something. But I did find that doing drawing every, you know, very, very regularly really helped. Making music regularly helped as well, because I found I would kind of do things that I otherwise wouldn't have thought of doing, or I'd try something new, or I'd just experiment with something. And by the end of the year, I'd got something like 40 albums worth of material, alongside all the stuff I'd been doing myself as my other main music things. It's worth doing. And it's, again, something I'd recommend to any listeners who want to find out what they're made of, is try something like that. Try doing something every single day. And you don't have to take a long time doing it. It's just a case of work out what works and keep doing it and keep trying. And it gets easier to do each thing the more you do them. I mean, do you find that you've sped up with these as you've gone along?
I've definitely gotten faster. It's pretty much an assembly line now. But I guess I should think about like changing the style, just because, you know, maybe I could grow as an artist if I'm doing something completely different, though. Though it would, I don't know, mess with the whole project in terms of seeing them all on my website in that similar look, that's what's so eye-catching about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you suddenly, you know, burst out into doing kind of photorealistic portraits or something, they would stick out, wouldn't they, those? So,
mm-hmm. And I have done a couple like that. It says on my website that, like, if you don't tell me a style or certain colors or whatever, it's going to end up looking a lot like the ones that I've done. But I have done things where people will ask for something that looks scary or black and white or, you know, more realistic. So I'm open to that. It's just rare, because that's usually people want the bright, bold pop art, cute stuff that I do.
And the ones that you've got, because you've got them on your Blogspot blog. Do you tend to post all of the ones you do, or is it just the ones you can get around to posting?
No, I post one a day, and, you know, usually make a joke about it or write some background, and they're, so every, yeah, it's not like I'm skipping any. They're all going up online.
So I have to say, how do you find the time in the day to do it all, Ali?
I don't know. I just make it a habit. Now it's like brushing my teeth.
So do you kind of get up? I mean, do you get up early and start just doing everything from the beginning of the day, or, you know, because it seems to me from what I'm looking at, you've got so many different kind of irons in the fire all the time. I kind of wonder how you make time to actually live.
I don't know. I mean, painting is living for me, and everything that I do, and with my music and whatever, all this creating, I enjoy it. So it's never a time where I'm forcing myself to work, but I am basically working. And it lasts.
Well, I mean, it does also raise the question, do you have a day job that you have to do, or are you at the point where it's now self-sustaining?
Well, it's not neither of those, actually. Right. I don't have a day job, and I'm still working on making this self-sustaining. It's been since February that I finally realized that, my music had enough momentum that it needed every waking moment of my time as opposed to all of my time after I'd left my day job. So mm-hmm. that's when I left the video game composing and animating job, and I've been full-time sprinting towards the music goal since then.
So what have been the kind of, well, I mean, I'm guessing the hitting the crowdfunder target would have been a high point. Have you had any particular high and low points during it? Is there anything that you would try and avoid ever happening again, and anything that you would like to repeat?
I wouldn't say that there, I mean, obviously, yeah, there are tons of high points. The getting funded and then the whole tour was just 2 months of high points. It was amazing. I actually thought that at least at some point I would want to go home, or by the end of it I would be sick of touring, but that wasn't the case at all. I felt like I could do that forever. And I can't really say there are any low points. It's right now I'm sort of in a weird transition period where I'm writing new music, and so things are definitely uncertain, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's been fun the whole time.
So if you're saying you're writing new music, does this mean that there's going to be, I mean, is there going to be a continuation of the kind of Power Hour format, or are you starting to write longer form music, or are you settling on the kind of 1 minute long?
Yeah, so I'm writing a new album that's going to be like real adult people music, as in like not 1 minute long like my kid compositions, as it seems. No, it's just going to be a regular album, and there it's not necessarily going to be drinking themed. Actually, I've been writing about drinking for a while, so it'll be probably inspired a lot by pop culture and the internet and that kind of thing. But yeah, regular length music, going to put out a typical album. And I'm still not giving up on the Power Hour kind of thing. I'm still performing that and working on that online. And I see in the future that I will probably do a Power Hour extension, a kind of addition to the game where you could turn it into a Centurion. So it would be another 40 songs, kind of like an expansion pack.
Right. So you're just going to, you can add little bits on and...
Yeah, exactly. And I'm still doing music, like you said, one a day. I'm super impressed that you ended with 40 albums worth of music.
It was about 40 albums worth, yeah, because...
That's insane.
It was a ridiculous amount. I mean, the thing is, you also have to remember that alongside the one a day, I was also working on other things. And
yeah.
When I put my mind to it, I get quite kind of prolific with these things and can...
Yeah, if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Well, that's it, yeah. I'm one of these people, I can sit and do nothing for a really long time, and then I'll get it in my head that I need to finish something. And that often involves starting it. And at that point, then I just get it done. So
yeah.
I will sit not making anything for, you know, a few months, and then when I start, it'll be done in less than a week.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've done a whole album in a day before, and, you know, so I set myself these little challenges. You know,
that's crazy.
Like, can I sit and write and record an album in the amount of time it takes to listen to the album? That kind of thing. You know, it's like when you just sit down and you just improvise the songs and they just have to be okay. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like little games I play with myself just to keep myself interested. Because, I mean, I've been doing it for a long time now. I mean, I started playing in bands when I was 16 and I'm horrifyingly 41 now. So, yeah, I have to kind of try and maintain my own interest in it. Because if I don't, it all goes poo really quick. So it's just something that I found. I mean, that's one of the things why I stopped playing. Because, I mean, a lot of the stuff I do now when I play live is improvised. And it's purely because I got so sick of rehearsing songs and having any of that going on. And it's, you know, it's just I got bored of it. And I mean, when I was, you know, my 20s and, you know, even into my 30s, I could have thought, oh, this is fine, I'm quite happy with doing that. But after a while, I just thought, ugh. Because I think the thing that audiences forget, and you'll know this as a musician, that for every time the audience hears a song, you've heard it 30 or 40 times.
Right.
You know, and it gets to the point where you're kind of grinding it out. You're just thinking, oh, I'm so bored of playing this. Or I did anyway. I'm guessing with what you're doing, you've got a bit more audience interaction so that, you know, it can keep going.
Yeah. The show's different every time for sure. For me at least, because I'm just playing with a whole crowd of people. So they bring a very different element to it.
So, I mean, the one thing I do want to ask, and it's slightly putting on my more serious hat in this one. It's kind of a difficult question to ask, and it's kind of like trying to word it in a way that doesn't sound like I'm trying to kind of spring a gotcha or anything like that on you, because I don't want you to think that.
It's fine. You can get me.
So it's, how would you react if somebody said to you, "Is this maybe encouraging binge drinking?"
Oh, people say that to me all the time. But I get that constantly. And yeah, I mean, it's still a struggle for me. The name of my company is Binge Responsibly. So I do my best to, well, not make light of it, but like not worry myself too much in terms of like people flipping out about what I do because they haven't experienced the show, which is, once you come to my actual performance, you'll realize that it's not about being irresponsible and that I'm encouraging people to just have a good time the whole time. And there are even songs that encourage you to, you know, either play with water or I sing about being a lightweight myself and that you just like alternate with water or just stop. and there's this one song called Everybody Wins, and I make it a point at all my shows to let people know that, you know, just showing up, you win the game. You don't have to take a sip. And there are plenty of people that have enjoyed my show sans alcohol.
I'm assuming, though, that there are situations where people get absolutely shit-faced.
I've never had anyone throw up in my show. I've never had, like, any sort of problems in terms of fights or the things going wrong with the bar. It's all been, I mean, and I guess I'm lucky in that respect, but really it's a great atmosphere. The it's very positive and it's more about playing together than it is about, you know, being irresponsible and just like harming yourselves. And I'm glad that my fans have been cool about that kind of thing and that it's become something, you know, much more positive than it could.
Yeah, and do you think that's partly, I mean, you mentioned the fans, do you think it's because the fans that you've got aren't from the kind of crowd that would see it as an opportunity to get absolutely hammered and fight each other? Do you think it's because maybe the audience is more kind of, this is a fun kind of communal thing to do, rather than let's just go and get hammered?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like it's been in great crowds and they're totally in for, you know, playing as opposed to being reckless.
Yeah. I think that's a good answer. I mean, and I suppose on the other hand as well is that you've got the bars that you're playing in have got a responsibility not to allow people to get kind of recklessly drunk.
Right, of course, yeah. And that's wonderful for me too because I know that there are people there that are watching for visibly intoxicated people to cut them off. And so, that type of thing is going to happen anyway. It's just happening now with my music as the background, you know.
I think the thing is, if you ever came and did it in the UK, I think the one thing you'd need to be aware of is that they don't age check so much here. So they don't kind of ID people at the bar. I mean, I was really surprised. The first time I went to the States, God, how old was I? I was in my early 30s. And I kind of went to a bar and got asked for ID, and I kind of just was like, well, look at me. I'm obviously not a teenager. But, you know, I had my passport with me as well. And I was really surprised that everywhere I went, I got ID'd. And that doesn't happen in the UK. That won't happen. People won't ID people so much. Well, I say it won't happen. I mean, it should happen, but it doesn't happen kind of as religiously as it does in the US. Yeah, I mean, have you got any plans of bringing the show overseas?
I have a lot of interest from people in the UK and Australia, actually. It's been very encouraging and super fun to see people around the world that are interested in what I do. I hope someday that I can get there. That would be fabulous.
Yeah, I think Australians would really go for it. Australians are, I think they can outdrink everybody in the entire world. I think even if you could change it to pint glasses, and I think the Australians would still be standing. I think if you went to Scotland, you'd find, I mean, and I can say this being, I was, even though I've got an English accent, I was actually born in Scotland, so I think I'm allowed to say this. I think in Scotland you'd find there might be fights, but not as much as maybe in England. I think, again, it would come down to picking the venues appropriately. Because guessing what you're doing could go horribly wrong if you had the wrong venue where they just didn't care about whether the punters were okay and were just interested in making money and not worrying if people were drunk or not. So, yeah. I mean, do you find that when you pick the venues, are you quite kind of choosy about where you play?
I've had some help now. I have an agent, which is nice. And before that, I wasn't able to be choosy in terms of trying to get venues attention and get myself out there and tour as much as I could on my own. But I mean, honestly, it's always been, they've been cool about it. And it, like you experienced, people are being ID'd a lot. It's the venues are actually looking out for themselves. So I've never had a problem with it because really it's they're caring for their business. So it's not like, I've had any issues with that.
No, so I mean, you're basically covered by them as well, aren't you? So it's sort of, you only have to really look after what you're doing because you know that the venue is going to be responsible for certain other things. So yeah, that is a good thing then, I think.
For sure, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the best answer you could get. I think that most people would listen to that and say, that's absolutely fine. I don't see any problem with that. So yeah, that's good. So you're working on the new album, and I think one of the things that interested me about what you're doing is the brevity of the songs. Now, my attitude towards music has always been that you make the song as long as there's song to go, if you see what I mean. Does that make any sense? So it's only as long as it needs to be.
Right. Well, if it's only as long as it needs to be, then it should be around a minute, because why would you need to repeat the chorus?
Exactly.
You've already heard it.
Yes, exactly. So it's one of these things, because when I hear songs on the radio where they repeat the chorus about 40 times at the end, I just think, why is that happening? Why then they've got 30 seconds worth of song there? Why are they adding in all this extra to pull it out to like 3 minutes, 4 minutes long? So do you think that kind of, you know, the brevity that you've learned from writing these 60 songs is going to spill over into the new record? Are you finding that you're writing quite economically?
Yeah, it's actually hard for me to get to 3 minutes. And it's been that way even before the Power Hour. I've always found that I brevity is the soul of wit, and I use that in my thoughts and in my music. You know, sometimes you do just like want to hear that chorus again, because if you've written something that really moves you, you know, that's why it's there twice at the end. So hopefully I can get to the point where I'm writing music that's worth hearing a couple of times.
You see, it reminds me of, I mean, I don't know if she had a hit in the States. There was a song called Sleeping Satellite by a singer called Tasmin Archer. And that, I talked about that on a recent podcast as well, which, again, might also be coming out after this one. So I do apologise about that, listeners. It is a mess. But anyway, if it's either one I've discussed, or you're going to hear me discuss it in another episode. And if you're hearing me discuss it there, then you'll know what I'm going to say now. But that song, it's only about 4 minutes long, but it seems about, you know, maybe an hour, 2 hours long, because it's got the same chorus just over and over and over again. And it starts with a chorus, then it has a verse, then it has a chorus, then I think another chorus, then a verse, then three or four choruses. And they're not even particularly good choruses. And that's always my kind of yardstick of how to get it horribly wrong. Because if the song kind of feels like it's just going on and on, and you're like looking at your watch and you're going, well, hang on a second, it's only been going for 30 seconds and it already feels like I've been here 10 minutes, then yeah, it can go badly awry. But I know exactly what you mean about if you've got something where you feel you've written a chorus that's actually worth hearing again, drop it in again. But again, it comes down to, is the song, it dictates how long it should be. I think stretching it out artificially is wrong, but I think artificially cutting it short can also be a mistake. Mm. So do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's also pretty standard formats that you write if you are looking to do radio ready music, and that's definitely my aim. So I will be sort of fitting that format, which it also makes things easier in a way, because if you have, it's hard to just sort of go at a piece of artwork direction, but if you have a box, then you're able to think outside of it.
Yes, absolutely. So, well, talking about, you know, you wanting your music to be radio ready, where do you want to see things go for yourself? What's your goal?
I would love to see lots of people appreciating my work. So that's always the goal for me, is to be able to make art that can resonate with many, that will love what I do and really find some joy in it. So hopefully there'll be a lot of ears on this next album, whether it's online or radio would be amazing. Although that would be a huge leap, and sure, that'll be my goal.
And I noticed you have quite a sizable following on Twitter.
The internet has been good to me. What I do plays well with the internet, so it's been fun.
Do you find that has helped with getting people kind of on board for helping out with things that you can sort of say, I need help with this, or anybody got any suggestions for that, and you get them kind of flooding in from this large number of people?
Yes, certainly. I mean, I wouldn't have had such a successful crowdfunding if I didn't have that audience and the community on Twitter. So it's been cool. And there have been times where I've just sort of reached out to say, hey, how do you feel about this new T-shirt? Or I'm writing this song. Actually, just recently I was writing a song, and I mentioned the subject and said, if anybody's got some jokes about it, I might add them to the song. And I ended up using, like, almost exactly word for word someone's tweet as a line in the song.
You see, looking at all the stuff you do and what you're describing, this might be a statement that you'll either agree or disagree with on this one. You're like Amanda Palmer if she wasn't really fucking annoying.
I've actually met Amanda Palmer, and we chat sometimes on Twitter because we're both very active on that social network, and she's super great. I mean,
in that case, I will say
she doesn't sit well with everyone, and I think that's great. You can't make art that everyone will like, but I appreciate that's actually a huge compliment. So thank you, because she's super talented.
Well, you see, my take on it would be, and again, speaking entirely for myself, I'm not speaking for you at all in this situation. So if Amanda Palmer hears this, I'm not speaking for Ali. You're kind of like in using the same tools, but through the point of actually using them properly, because you don't have the support of a multimillionaire husband.
Oh, so all right. I've
or
never
do you? I don't, well, maybe you do. No, but yeah.
No, I don't. I am single and an actual starving artist. But there's nothing wrong with not being a starving artist. That's another thing. Absolutely. I would love to debunk that myth that you don't have to struggle financially to make good art, because so many people believe that, and our culture reinforces it, and that is discrediting people's good work.
Well, and it also has to be said, if there's any multimillionaire husband materials out there listening, Ali's free. You know,
I'm looking for a sugar daddy.
She's out. If you can appreciate short form pop music and colourful art, she's right there. So actually, no, I'm, that sounds like I'm pimping you out via a podcast.
Go for it. I don't even care.
There you go. Well, there you go.
What the internet is for.
There you go. That's it. So if there is a millionaire listening, she's not going to marry anybody. So if you're an arse, then they've got to woo you, surely.
Woo me with dollars.
Would that come on now? You know, I think you'd eventually want to be wooed with actual wooing, rather. Unless, you know, they could turn up with a lot of money, but you know how effective is that going to be? Actually, that sounds. I think that's going into a whole area that maybe I'll divert away from that. as I was saying these things, I was kind of thinking this could go dark very quickly. Let's move away from that. So, ideally, would you like to see it to the point where, I mean, obviously, I'm guessing you'd like to be able to make a full living from it.
Yes, sure.
And and not be the starving artist, though. As you point out correctly, there's nothing wrong with being a starving artist. would you like to get to the point where you could be kind of more of a household name or something like that, or within those kind of circles, people know who you are?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I would love a large amount of people to appreciate my art. It's always what I'm striving for, is to connect with on a big scale. So household name would be fabulous. that would be the ultimate goal.
Well, I have to say, 1.5 million Twitter followers is probably a good start.
I hope you're right, and it's been fun so far to have that community to be able to interact with.
Okay, so before we draw things to a close, is there anything you'd like to tell people about that I haven't kind of asked in my kind of slightly scattershot, ramshackle way of interviewing?
Well, I guess I could have fit this in. It's not that you didn't ask about it, but I'm also doing a web show where I write one song a week. But geez, why bring that up? You've done one a day.
Oh no, but that's good. I mean, if you do, so tell us about that.
Yeah, it's called the most Googled song, and this is one of the songs that I talked about where I took the guy's suggestion from Twitter, and it helped with my song. But basically, I write a song once a week about a subject that was most Googled, so things that were trending online that people were searching for. I'll write a song, and it's usually really short. I say 1 minute, but actually, most of them have been over a minute so far. And yeah, it's just a comedic take on something that everyone was Googling for the week.
And how long are you going to keep doing that for? Is that just something that's going to be, again, an indefinitely long project?
Yeah, this was definitely indefinite for sure, and we'll see if it sort of takes off, or if maybe I find something, it evolves into something else. I'm just sort of trying it out, trying out the internet YouTube show kind of thing.
I'm sure this is something you've thought of, but if you continue doing it indefinitely, there is going to be a week where the most Googled thing is going to be something horrifying.
No, it's true. I mean, I have a bunch to pick from because it's a whole week. So, I mean, if it gets to the point where there's a week of one thing that was just horrifying, well, then the whole internet will have already been talking about it. So I'll probably want to write a song about this horrifying
So
thing.
he'd be able to. Yeah, I think it's one of the things. It's one of the perils of kind of taking from a source over which you have no control, is that eventually there's going to be, just because it will happen at some point, something awful happens that everybody talks about for the next 15 years. And if you're doing a project like that, then yeah, you could either, well, I suppose you could pick something else from that week from just before it happened, or
Right, but that's the interesting challenge in it for sure.
yeah. It's like, I'm kind of thinking, if you'd been in the situation on September the 11th, you've got the choice of writing about a terrorist atrocity or Michael Jackson's new album coming out on the same day. So, yeah,
Oh, yeah.
that's not something that any. Well, let's be grateful that isn't going to happen again while you're doing this in the same
Right,
way.
that would be
So.
impossible.
Yeah. Well, you could. I don't know. I'm. It's one again. It's a topic that it could go down a route of wrongness very fast. Where would people go online to find out about your work?
AliSpagnola.com.
And that's AliSpagnola.com.
Yep.
Yep. And as I say, the link will be in the information that comes with the podcast for people. Is there anything else I wanted to ask you? I think that's pretty much everything. I will put links to everything in there. So you've got the new album coming up. You're still doing the Power Hour stuff. You're still working through the almost eternity of paintings. That's probably going to take the rest of your life, let's be honest. That does raise a question. What will happen when you're kind of like, a ripe old age and you've still got a back lots of these to do? Are you going to say to people, you know what, it's looking shady that I'm going to be able to do these?
I think I should get an apprentice and then train that person to take over for me so this project will never end. But it's pretty tough to get an intern of sorts that will work for free and then still have no potential for making money on said career. So I'll work on it.
It could be like one of those, I think they're kind of South American boy bands where you could just replace people over time.
Yeah,
Slowly
exactly.
just have it roll on like that, and in 1,000 years people are still doing it, and you're long forgotten, and there's some person sitting there going, I don't know why I even do these, but it's there's some reason it's become a thing. Anyway, so I've rambled long enough, I think. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Ali.
It's great talking to you too.
Thank you
Thanks for
very
having me.
much. I will, when I something I should have mentioned at the start of the podcast, which again I've done this before, I've forgotten to mention this. I'll still be on the call for a few minutes after the podcast's finished, if you see what I mean. So I will say goodbye, but then I won't have gone. So
Okay.
if that makes sense, because listeners, a little bit does go on afterwards that you don't get to hear. So there you go. Apart from I'm saying that, but on a couple of them, they then have got to hear it because then it was so good, I then put it in. But anyway, so all that's left to say then is go and check out Ali's work. It's inventive, it's colourful. She's taken something that could potentially be difficult in terms of whether it's responsible or not, and has managed to maintain the responsibility of it. And you know, it's something different. It's something that you're not seeing from anybody else, so go and check it out. And all that's left to say then is a Future Library goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Bottom. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbottom.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk, where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening.